Hi, everybody. Thank you for your support as always. The NARCCon podcast is now offering a membership only subscription of the price of a cup of coffee per month for all new and some of the old podcasts going into the membership section. Please join us if you'd like more of this content. We would love to see you there. And to remind you, should you wish to avail of the free content, it is available over on YouTube in both video and podcast form. God bless everyone. Take care, and I hope you enjoy the content that's to come. Hello, everyone, and you're very welcome to our podcast, NARCCon, with a sleepy Remy there in the background. Today's podcast is going to be about when the narcissist can't control you, they will try and control how other people see you. So this is actually a direct quote from one of the comments. So I'm telling you, I read all the comments, and the comments are really important, an important part of this process for people recovering from narcissistic abuse and getting to know what a narcissist is, how to avoid them, how to understand what you went through, and all of that process. That's extremely important when people have been crushed, or the narcissist has attempted to crush you in a relationship. So this is particularly pertinent when people come out of a discard by a narcissist. First of all, you weren't expecting the discard. The narcissist literally dropped you on your head and kicked you to touch. And then, you know, you're recovering from that and you're trying to come up with reasons as to why it may have happened. And there may be something wrong with the person you loved. You know, there may be they're going through something. You're searching for explanations. And then you hear the narcissist has been going around saying things about you. It's like a double twist of an evil nightmare. It's nearly too much to bear, because it is mind blowing. So that's why I would like to get into this today. And I think it'll help. I hope it'll help. Just before I do, the version of Weaponized Love, the book that I've written that's available on Amazon, is now, today, going live on Audible. So for anyone that wants to check that out, it should be live on Audible when this podcast goes out. Fingers crossed. Okay, so in order to understand what is going on in the narcissist's mind, in the discard and the ensuing smear campaign, if they consider the smear campaign necessary, when the narcissist fails to control you in the relationship and you give kickback, or you're questioning, you're looking for answers from the narcissist, that really annoys them, so that they will consequently go on and change the narrative of who you are to other people. Why do they do that? The narcissist chooses a false identity at a very young age. So they put their true self aside for whatever reason, and people will often say it's due to their circumstances or a trauma in their early life. I personally think it is that, but it's genetic as well, in my opinion. It's carried down. So I think it's both nurture and nature, but that's just an opinion. However, what does happen that we know in relation to the formation of the narcissistic personality disorder is that the true self is set aside. There is going to be no introspection or accountability, because that is not acceptable to the individual soul that's developing. And they develop a false fake persona. This persona is going to be perfect. This persona is going to be Superman or Superwoman. This persona is never going to be wrong. And this persona is going to be superior. So that there is going to be no vulnerability to the true self. Now, if you think about this, this is a construction. This is a fake, like, hologram. This hologram is the life force then of the individual. And this hologram needs to be believed by the individual as being real, even though they know it's not. In moments where you'll have narcissistic collapse. They know it's not. And subconsciously, they know it's not. But to the forefront of their functioning in an everyday reality, they have to believe in it. And they have to have other people believe in it. Those two criteria get the narcissist through life, destroying, batting down anyone that goes against them, in particular, anyone that's close to them in a relationship. So that's how important it is for the narcissist to remain in control and uncriticized, because their very existence depends on it, this fragile structure. So getting back to the relationship with the narcissist, in order to get narcissistic supply, which keeps this hologram alive, the narcissist needs to take a human being in and control that human being in order to maintain stability of narcissistic supply from that human being. The narcissist needs to believe in the construction of themselves, the false construction, and they need the other human being to believe fully in the false construction so that they can control that human being sufficiently and for a long enough period of time to be able to literally feed off them, to feed off their energy, to feed off their emotional energy in particular, and to get all the other needs met that the narcissist doesn't want to expend energy on. That can be financial status, living place, all of those things that they've chosen the individual they're with, or in a family or in a workplace, whatever that person is going to bring to the construction to make it stronger, to make it more believable by kind of, you know, belief by association with the narcissist is with a good person. Therefore, other people think they must be a good person also because, you know, you've chosen to be with them or their boss approves of them, whatever. So understanding that, let's get into what happens with the narcissist, because that is fundamental, that you know that you're dealing with this type of scenario, basically, so that you're not judging it from your own normal human, you know, assessment of a character, because that gets very confusing when somebody as the narcissist appears to you is so cruel to you and is so critical of you. Instead of actually introspecting and fully taking on the blame for yourself, it is very healing to understand that this individual does this to everyone that they can't control, particularly malignantly towards somebody who they've banked as a narcissistic supply source. So we've gone through the narcissist needing essentially control of the narrative, control of who they believe they are, and control of who you believe they are. So let's get into the stage where the narcissist is getting pushback from you in the relationship. You're looking for your needs to be met, you're exhausted, or the narcissist goes against your children, or they go against your pet. You begin to, you know, everyone has this kind of a crunch point of they'll endure an awful lot that another person is giving out, and they'll try and understand, and they'll introspect, and they'll take accountability, even false accountability, for something that they're not to blame for in the relationship. But generally people have a crunch point, and it's either coming from exhaustion, adrenal fatigue, or say a narcissist cheating, or the narcissist attempting to hurt or destroy your family, or again, your pet. And when that crunch point comes and you actually dig your feet in and decide, I'm not putting up with much more of this, I'll do my best to work around it, but ultimately, at the back of your mind, a gate is closed. And by God, does the narcissist know that. It's like when your gate closes, it's like an alarm goes off in the narcissist's head. And even before your gate closes, the narcissist is looking at you in a kind of a spiritually energetic context, knowing that you're heading to the gate, that you have your hand on one side of the gate, that you're pulling it slightly closed, but you still remain open because you haven't finally decided yet. But the narcissist knows, because they have to be hyper vigilant and paranoid is the way it appears, because you're about to cut off what's keeping them in existence and keeping them powerful and keeping them from not being vulnerable. So they have to get there first and discard you. We won't go into that any further, but this is just part of the story, a part of understanding what goes on in the narcissist's head at this stage. So when they know, or they think they know, they make an assessment, and it's often a false assessment, because you may have another year left in you before you'd give up on the narcissist, but you will be harder to control. It'll be harder to get things out of you. You'll be kind of putting it up to the narcissist every now and again. And if they do a mini discard and you're not totally grateful when they come back, you know, you're grateful for a day or two, and then you're kind of going, oh, is this worth it, at the back of your mind? So incrementally, you're becoming harder to get the electricity out of the emotional energy that they suck from you and other things. The narcissist knows that they need to find another source that's going to be a stable form of narcissistic supply, life force, basically. So you're in the narcissist's mind. As you become more difficult to control, you're telling the narcissist that actually you have doubts about who they are, that they're not the person that they portray themselves to be in the beginning of the relationship. And amusingly and awfully, that's exactly what they'll say to you when you start advocating even a tiny bit for yourself, that you've changed. You didn't change. The narcissist just presented a fake, really fake person in the love bomb stage, and you're beginning to see the real construction of the narcissist as they get crueler and crueler in the devaluation stage and trying to control you. So basically, again, when the narcissist starts the relationship, they know that there's a finite timeline to it. At the back of their mind, they're kind of going, I'll go with this for now, because they always live in the now. But they know that there's a limit, more than likely, to how long they'll want to stay with you when they get what they want from you, that there's a time they'll need to leave you. So they're always setting up options. The narcissist never hems themselves in. They never just have one person. They never just, if they can, they never just have one person. So what they're doing in the background of controlling you, and they have to believe that they're superior to you. So in the love bomb, when you start to get confident and display, you know, confidence and happiness, that also threatens the narcissist's construct and feeling of being omnipotent and superior. They take a bit out of that, the superiority feeling, and think, I've made you happy. So that gives them supply and fuel for a while. But when you again become more confident and start to achieve things and start to own it yourself, that's not okay for the narcissist. That's not okay, because the narcissist feels they made you successful. So at that stage, they will take you down and go into the devaluation. I'm trying to explain this in a kind of a roundabout way. So it's important for the narcissist to follow their own narrative, which makes the narcissistic personality disorder a really bad way of getting a person's needs met, because they can't stay in a relationship with somebody who's in any way healthy or happy, because they need to own the person's happiness and health. When the person starts to own it for themselves, that interferes with the narcissist's narrative and defense mechanism of being superior, omnipotent, and the only person in the world that can do anything successfully. So the narcissist needs to change the narrative there by devaluing you. Now, they also need a get out of jail clause. So they, at the beginning of the relationship, will drop little sprinkles of doubts amongst other people who say, oh my gosh, Joe's doing great. He's really happy. You know, look at the success they've had in work, or Mary, you know, wow, I've never seen her looking so great, and all of these things. The narcissist, when they hear that praise of the other person, will start to go, I know, it's great. Albeit now, you know, they were struggling quite a bit, but I was able to support them. So, you know, it worked like that. And yeah, I'm keeping a good eye on them because they do have their times when they go quite low. All of this absolute, I won't say it, you can say it now. All of this absolute, you know what. So their get out of jail clause is knowing, they know that they're going to be leaving you at some stage at the back of their mind. They know that it's unlikely to be a long-term relationship if you stand up for yourself in any way, shape or form. Let's see what's going on there in the background. If you're on audio, the producer is performing. Okay, so essentially they're setting from the beginning of the relationship, they know that they can't successfully have a relationship with somebody long term and have that person as their main source of supply. Some of them have long term relationships and use the person at home to literally wipe their feet on and get their main source of supply from, say, a workplace or friends or some other source. So generally, you're going to get the narcissist that's monkey branching to other people, to other sources of supply, recycling old sources of supply, etc. So when they discard you or coming to the discard, if you've gotten too much self-respect and you've put boundaries in that maybe you never put before in, you know, you may have had a narcissistic parent and you may have been the type of person that just always believes bad of yourself, or, you know, in general does, and in general goes along with other people's opinions of you. You may not. You may never have done that before. But regardless, it's a time when you start to feel some sense of self-esteem and self-respect. And it's very, very hard after the devaluation a narcissist will put you through. But there's something in you. There's a knowing. I call it a knowing that this is not right. This is not right. And nobody should put up with it. Your friend, you wouldn't tell your friend to put up with it. You wouldn't tell your brother or sister to put up with it. So why are you putting up with it? And then, you know, that whatever made you close the gate, whatever heinous thing the narcissist did or said has made you, brought something up inside you that says, no, 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 I won't go any further. So you're going to be punished for something that's really healthy. You're going to be punished for having self-respect. And the narcissist needs to absolutely destroy you at all costs, because what you're saying to the narcissist is, I'm not allowing you to control me any further. I don't believe in your fake persona. I've seen enough to know that this isn't right and you're not real. You are not who you say you are. The narcissist cannot bear that because it's literally going to shatter the fragile glass image of who they are to themselves. So you have to be taken out, and you have to be taken out really, really hard. You have to be literally, if the narcissist can, crushed by the discard, which is the reason that when the narcissist feels really threatened by you having your eyes open to who they are, they need to give you a commensurate discard with how open your eyes are. You are a direct threat to the narcissist. You must be given the most cruel discard at the worst possible time to leave you as weak as possible. So they'll do their best, particularly towards the end, to isolate you, to get you into arguments with friends, if at all possible, to give you false narrative on what your family say or what people are saying about you. And they literally be going all in on their hidden smear campaign that goes on throughout your relationship. They're going to call in the tickets. They're going to call in people. They're going to get there before you. They're going to say, I'm really worried about Paula. She's showing real signs of deterioration. She's not remembering where she put things. Bank cards go missing, found in the narcissist's drawer, all of this kind of. I think she needs to get booked in somewhere. I think he's drinking every night. I'm really worried about him. He got a bit violent with me there the other night. Or they've called the police in at a different time and you are being portrayed as the crazy daisy to some people. And I have an interesting point here as to how they go about this. So if the discard isn't bad enough and you're left shattered and you're just about surviving, sometimes they won't come in hard with the smear campaign if they know how much you're suffering and that you're really pushed down. That will make them feel powerful. It will reestablish their sense of omnipotence, that they have left you because you're not worth staying with, nothing to do with them not being worth staying with. That'll have re-regulated them to a sense of brilliance. They will go off feeling absolutely wonderful about themselves, powerful, in control, and they've really stood up for who they are and who they believe they are. And how dare you question them? So they're actually getting off on this discard. So if you are really suffering and they hear back that you're really suffering, they won't go too hard in the smear campaign. However, if they hear you have the audacity to actually say to anybody, tell anyone the truth, they will come really hard at you. This is like the second wave, the second battle. And you'll be going, I cannot understand this. I cannot understand this. Why are they attacking me from afar? People are looking at me funny. They're telling people untruths about me. They've reported me to the law. Oh my God, they've gone to my work. They're really out to destroy me. And you're going, what have I done to deserve this? What you've done to deserve this is to have self-respect and to tell the truth. But can you imagine if somebody doesn't know what they're dealing with, how absolutely devastating this is, that the person that you love and still love, because you don't know the truth about who they actually are, you only had snippets to go on. Well, this, I hope, will help. This is what's going on with the narcissist. It's nothing about you. It's just what you're holding a mirror up to them and saying, I don't believe you. I don't believe who you are anymore. And these are the things you've done, like in the relationship. But you're telling people the exact opposite of that. Just tell me if this is not what I could possibly, or anybody could possibly, define as being evil. I mean, if you're to push this to the side and say, ah, it's just a personality disorder, then what is evil? Anyway, I won't go there, but I'm just kind of saying this is the conclusion I came to, having sorted out the psychological aspect of the narcissistic personality disorder. Now for the interesting bit that I think is interesting. So all narcissists are driven by the same, you know, behavior drivers, to have control and to be an authority and to kill, steal and destroy so that they're okay. Different narcissists come from different categories. You'll get the more basic narcissist that goes around, you know, shouting the odds and being obnoxious and not worrying who people see them as, and just being absolutely awful, you know, really slob-like and disgusting and just not caring, just going about bamboozling people and bombarding them. But then you get the more dangerous, I call the more dangerous narcissist, who does have great care that the outside persona is perceived as being a good person and somebody upstanding and, you know, with dignity and respect and superior. And those people are the ones that go about to the different people that you have maybe in your joint group and have a different approach to the smear campaign, customized to the person they're speaking with. So if they're speaking, say, with another narcissist that's all, oh, you know, boom, you know, we'll have a bottle of beer now and we'll do this and we'll do that and who cares what they think and, you know, all this, that kind of basic stuff. The narcissist will give it right to them, will sock it to them and say, oh, you know, she was just, you know, yourself. And then, you know, the other narcissist will say back to them, oh, you're dead right, mate, to leave her, you know, or to leave him. Oh, come on, we go down the pub, you know, that kind of thing. Then that canny narcissist who's on the next level of, you know, that type of mask management will go to someone who's, say, quite a respectable individual or caring individual. Say, let's say they're working as a counsellor or something like that, and say, I'm actually quite concerned about Paula. You know, she has been acting very oddly. I did my best and I did this. And what do you think of my, you know, attempting to do this? And when I did this, she actually came at me with a saucepan and tried to hit me over the head. That kind of old rubbish. They will literally customize their approach to different people so that different people believe them. They're like the false prophet. They come in with lies. They twist the truth. They shape it like a sculpture and they present it to the person who will receive it best in that form, basically. And that, my friends, is literally what's happening in a cruel discard and in a disgusting smear campaign. It is commensurate with how much you pose a threat to the narcissist's false mask or construction. Because the only thing that is important to the narcissist is that the covert narcissist of any intellectual ability is that they believe in their own false mask and that nobody dents that belief, because they need to keep it alight and held up from the back, and that other people believe in the false mask so it can go through life killing, stealing and destroying and sucking the energy out of other people and manipulating other people to manipulate other people to become their narcissistic supply, to become the energy that keeps that hologram going. And that's it. Thank you to the commenter for leaving that wonderful, insightful comment. So a whole podcast has been made out of that. So please keep commenting. If you want to receive the podcasts, even do a hi, even do a like, then the algorithm on YouTube will send you the podcasts. We upload about every two every week, usually. So again, if you want to regularly to get the podcasts, do something to interact with the content and it should be sent to you, hopefully. Take very good care. Happy holidays, as some people say, as other people say, happy Christmas. And if you're not celebrating it, happy New Year.